Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, folks, to Talkville. Yes, it's a new year. It's a new dawn, a new day. It's the fifth episode back. It still feels like...
Let's clarify, this is the first one we're recording in the new year.
This is the first one we're recording in the new year. But look, Talkville is the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. We go back every episode we watch. Again, this episode, I didn't remember at all. I never watched it. I have a lot to say about this, as I'm sure Ryan and Tom do as well. Tom do or Tom does?
Well, I do. I didn't know it was going to happen. But when the evil dad, I remember being impressed by him on the day, being like, wow, he's like a real actor.
You know what? Well, we'll get into it because I have a lot to say, because I was transfixed on that guy too. And there's some clarity here. We'll talk about it. But look, we love doing this. Thank you, patrons. Talkvillepodcast.com. You can go get some awesome merch. We're going to be doing some stuff. Tom and I will have some autographs up soon. You could Zoom with us if you want to. There's a Zoom thing. You can purchase a Zoom, but we're only doing like on one day per month, like five in a row, and then we're done for the month. So they'll fill up quickly.
I thought you said we were going to go do Zumba. No, it's
Zumba. I think Zumba's a little passe.
I don't know if it's around anymore.
All right, Talkville Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Talkville Podcast. Please follow us, Talkville Pod on the Twitter, and also make sure you write a review. Tell us what you think. We love when you chime in. Call the hotline, which I'll talk about here. It's, you leave questions, we answer them. If you want to leave a message for us, you could go to any handle or wherever you're watching the podcast, and in the description of the show title, you'll get the hotline number. It's there. Everything for you. Right, Ryan.
Yeah, it's 213-538-2883, in case you were wondering.
Season 2, Episode 26. This is called Nocturne. Title Nocturne aired October 22nd, 2002. That was 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago.
Do we know why it's called that?
Well, yeah, because nocturnal people, they're only up at night. They just want to be but during the day. Like animals, for instance, are nocturnal. They have to have dark. They don't live in light. They can't survive. Director Rick Wallace, writers Brian Peterson and Kelly Souders, who eventually would run the show in seasons 8, 9, and 10, maybe even 7, I don't know. No, I think 8, 9, and 10. Kelly and Brian are wonderful people, wonderful writers. They ran the show. I love them. They're incredible writers. So if I say anything that insults you, it's not that I hated the episode. Just, it's criticism. But I love you. Guest star was Sean Ferris as Byron Moore, Gwyneth Walsh as Mrs. Moore, and Richard Mall as Mr. Moore. Now, do you not know who Richard Mall is, Tom?
I do. I did at the time. I forgot he was in this episode, and then I watched it, and I remembered. I remember being very impressed with him because of Night Court.
Night Court. Bull.
Yeah.
He's still alive. He's like 79 years old. I wish I would have been able to reach out to him for this. I don't know if he'd come on, but boy.
He's a big dude. He's a big dude.
Huh?
He's a big dude.
He was so good in this episode. He had such a look. He reminded me of almost like a Clancy Brown kind of character. Really intense. Fantastic job. Gwyneth Walsh had a smaller role, but she did a fine job. Sean Ferris, he did a good job. Did what he could. Nice job, Sean. Synopsis, Clark tries protecting Lana from a secret admirer who's been leaving poems on her parents' gravesite. Fed up with Clark's overprotectiveness, Lana follows the stranger to his home and discovers his parents keep him locked in chains. Clark and Lana break in to save the boy, but soon realize why he was locked up in the first place.
What was the dad doing? You know, the kids, he gets locked up in the basement and the dad's like doing something up above and the noise was so horrible. And all I could think was like, not only are you trapped in the basement, but you got to listen to your dad like doing machinery.
Well, he's locking the kid in. He's screwing the bolts into the ground on the flap, the door or whatever, so he can't get out.
I see.
But even so, like, you know what bothers me about this episode? I'm going to shit on it right away. Is he loves his son. His son tried to kill him because he was obviously out during the day and he transformed into some creature. I don't even know what the hell it was, like a werewolf meets Smallville thump something. But my issue is, but why did his dad have to be such an asshole? Why'd he say, I love you, and be nice to him and say, hey, you're down here, and not lock him up and be like, hey, I guess he always tries to get out, but he understands why his dad puts him there. But if they treated him right, not tortured him and locked him up and threatened to shoot him and zap him, and it just was like, I wish they would have started out nicer. Like tears in his eyes, tears in the father's eyes. You know I hate doing this, but I have to. That would have been more effective if I was in the writer's
room. Well, it did seem like there was a moment that we didn't see on camera where they put up that nice poster of the beach and the sunset. That must have been a bonding moment.
Oh, yeah. Just a beautiful background of peace.
Did you see that?
Okay, here's a play-by-play. We'll talk about it. The show opens with Lana on horseback in the cemetery visiting her parents at 2 in the morning. Why? Why 2 in the morning? Why not 4 in the afternoon? Why is she always going here, a young girl, in the middle of the night in a cemetery? Why is she doing that?
The episode is not called Sunshine. It's called Nocturne.
On the grave, we see an envelope for her sealed with a wax bee. Before she finds out who it's from, we see Byron Moore, a young man running away through the woods. He trips, he falls, and is met by the end of a barrel as his father stands over him. He shoots him with a tranquilizer. It surely sounded like he shot him with a gun. Didn't sound like a taser to me. Did you guys notice that?
Oh, that was a decision in post. They wanted us to think that he was shot.
Yeah, usually it would be like a...
Yeah, didn't like that. He shoots him with a tranquilizer, takes him back to the cellar where he's locked up, threatens him to never escape again. At school the next day, Chloe, I liked how they shot the woods. It was beautifully shot. All the wood stuff, the fog and the night, it really captured that darkness. So that's a positive. At school the next day, Chloe is talking to Lana about the love letter she received. She's a little creeped out by it, but Lana thinks it's sweet. Why is it sweet? Some dude left it on your parents' grave.
Poor Lana, she's like, everybody's giving me crap about this love letter.
Clark finds out about the new admirer and thinks it's a little mushy and stalkerish. I do too. I just don't know how. I'm not blaming the writers. I'm just saying, how do you sit in a room and think logic? And that's logical. This is illogical as you can get.
Why couldn't Clark have said, Lana, here's the deal. I'm really happy for you that you got this love letter. It's beautifully written. It's really cool. It's not something I could do. But let's consider the fact he's leaving it on your parents' gravestone.
Let's do that. And you hear someone running away at night. Yes, yes, I agree. Lana has a remark here about Clark being emotionless and the Man of Steel. Now, as much as I like these little, whatever you call
nods,
them.
Easter eggs,
nods at who you'll become.
Winks.
I didn't think this fit. I thought it was too effing on the nose. He's emotionless. You know, you're like the Man of Steel. It just was like too grasping. And I was like, I rolled my eyes a little. Because usually it works. If Al's listening to this, the creator, Al, I'm just being honest here, buddy. I like episodes. And it's not that I hated this episode. We'll get into it. At the town, Lex finds a love letter and admires the writing. Lana is standing. Again, he walks up and he's already picked up this letter that she's left on the counter. It was just too, everything was on the money. Everything was forced. That's what I didn't like about a lot of this stuff. Lana seems standoffish because she doesn't want anyone else's two cents in the matter, but of course she tells Lex to read it. After Lex finishes talking about seduction with Lana, this is the first time he's flirted, this 21-year-old man with a 17, 16-year-old caller.
Well, you flirted with that woman who you married in an episode or two ago.
Yes, but I also think, you know, it wasn't disgusting because he wasn't creepy. He just was sort of like, you know, hey, telling her about like teaching a young girl. It was kind of creepy. After Lex finishes talking about seduction with Lana, Clark interrupts her convo to warn her about this admirer creep. Lana tells Clark he can't expect her to share everything with him if he won't with her, which is the ongoing theme for quite a few of these last episodes. Here's what I don't understand. Clark, now Tom, I'm asking you this. As a boy in high school, was a high school teenager. The most beautiful girl in school obviously is into you. She's been into you since you bumped into her, I don't know, a year ago. Now, even if you're not sharing everything with her, why can't you just tell her you are? I am sharing her, and then make a move. And let her believe, because it's lying, but it's not. It's you're protecting her. You don't need to tell her everything. You just say, Lana, from here on out, I'm sharing everything with you. And, you know, let things happen. And down the road, after you've slept with her, it's consensual, you're 18, down the road, whenever you do it, I was about 18 or more. Then you say, by the way, I got this super strength. She goes, I noticed.
How about, hey, at this point in my life, Lana, I've got nothing else to share. This is what you see is what you get right now.
Yeah.
So you want to go get a coffee at your store?
What do you do? I think she kind of liked Red Clark in a way.
Liked Red Clark, and Clark liked Nicodemus Lana.
Yeah.
Everyone sharing all the feelings.
Yeah.
Look, could you imagine those two?
Oh boy. At Luther Manor, we find Lionel firing another assistant. They're having trouble filling the role, and Lionel is leaning on Lex to be his eyes during the process, but he's failing.
Did you notice how he hit you? He was holding something in his hand, and he got up from the table and he hit you. And I was like, "See, he's not blind."
Did you notice that? No.
He slapped you with like his paperwork as he was walking away, and I was like, "How did he know he was there?"
Man, don't you get hit getting slapped by paperwork?
If he was blind, being slapped by paperwork. That should be a t-shirt we put on the podcast, slapped by paperwork. Talk, Mel. And larks. Martha,
we could really do that. We could do like the Smallville sign, but instead of Smallville, we put Talkville, and in the bottom, instead of population, it's just slapped by paperwork.
And only our Talkvillians will know what we're talking about. Wearing the shirt and saying, screw you, if you don't understand it, you don't listen to Talkville. Martha, looking for their monthly produce payment, meets with Lionel outside as he's listening to market updates on Luther Corp. She helps him finish his reading and is impressed with her business acumen. That night in his cellar, we see Byron writing another love letter. He's interrupted by his mother, who gifts him a book by Edgar Allan Poe. She tells him to not leave again. Byron,
for your own good, Clark, for your own good, you have to stay home. I mean, there's a little bit of parallel here. Different degrees of it.
Yeah.
It's the same theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what if Clark had overprotective parents like this kid? What if they shoved him in the basement?
Well, Clark does good things, though. This guy kills people, probably. He's a monster.
Well, he hurt his dad, too. They alluded to that earlier, that his father was hurt. Like, last time he got out, like, he already caused problems for his father.
What if he wore, like, a light deflecting suit with a mask, and he could walk around during the day like a hazmat suit? At least he'd be during the day. He has a skin disorder, just tell people. And that way he could be, you know.
Bubble boy.
Byron disobeys his mother, escaping out of the cellar through exposed brick in a wall to leave Lana another note. As he approaches the gravestone to leave this letter, Lana wakes up from her nap.
Well, she's been
at the cemetery at 3 in the morning.
She's tired. She goes on rides at 2 o'clock in the morning.
That will get you another season. It's just not.
But
thank God. Well, you have to have these every once in a while, I suppose. But she stops Byron running away. No, thank you, creep guy who's running away. And
I'm getting the sense this might be a Rosenbaum sort of episode.
The more I think about it, the
Rosenbaum.
You know, I watched this right before we were doing this, so it's fresh in my mind. I didn't hate it. I did not hate it. I just have so many issues that I thought were like writing 101. Like, what in the hell?
It sounds to me like Rosenbaum has never been wooed by a poem before.
No one's ever written you a poem. This is a great way to get Kelly and Brian to guest on the show.
In the woods, she goes to shine a light on Byron to see him better. He reacts by hitting the flashlight out of her hands, aggressive. Clark sees this and springs into action, causing Byron to run away until he trips over a gravestone, smacking his head. And he's not the first to trip over the gravestone and smack his head.
Whitney, the whole thing.
Three head to the Talon. While there, they learn about his homeschooling, and Clark notices wounds on his wrists from being bound. Byron realizes what time it is as the morning approaches and rushes home. As they pull up to Byron's house, his parents greet him on the front porch. Rifle in hand, his father is pissed that he escaped, and his mother rushes him back to the cellar frantically.
Because here's a quick little thing that I did remember when I watched that. When he pulls out the shotgun and they cut to Clark and Lana, do you notice Lana's reaction is like, oh my God, there's a gun. And I remember on the day making a choice of like, I'm not going to overreact to the gun because it can't hurt me. And I remember the director saying, you got to react to the gun. And I go, do I? And he was like,
you know what?
I
remember, and I liked the choice because it wasn't your typical Clark. Like, because look, there's two choices. One is he's going to shoot the kid, and now you're going to have to show your secret to Lana and these other people. But also there's like, I'm gonna kill you, dude. Don't mess with me. There's sort of that. So it was kind of ambiguous. I kind of liked it. I really did.
I would also like to call it another one of your acting choices from a scene ago when he's like reciting the poem out loud to Lana in the Talon when it's your eye. I've never seen your eyes get so wide. Like it was like.
Who, mine?
No, Tom's.
Oh, Tom's. Yeah.
Tom's. It was.
Clark didn't appreciate that.
Clark has always been like very like furrowed brow, like concerned about everything. And then he's just like. It was notable to me. I don't
remember anything in this episode other than when we do Smallville Nights, the scene with me and Lionel. There's a scene where we, you know, when he's blind and we act that out, you and I, at these Smallville Nights when we go to cons. And that was kind of fun to see that and how I actually played it and how he played it.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Tom, I can't tell you how much therapy helps me and helps so many of my friends. Ryan uses BetterHelp. It is just something that it's part of my routine. And BetterHelp's been with us a long time. And guys, the stigma is gone. Getting help and feeling better about yourself and learning things about yourself, understanding is part of the process and so important so you don't end up old and miserable. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. Therapy with BetterHelp is just a good place to start when you want to understand you better. If you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire. It takes no time at all to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/talkville today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/talkville.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So Martha's offered a job by Lana. Before she accepts it, she has to get Jonathan's blessing. He's hesitant, but she tells him she needs a challenge and they could use the money. Now, I have a problem with this.
No.
Martha knows how much disdain Jonathan has for Lionel Luther, let alone Lex. She would never want to hurt him, and she would never get a job with Lionel as much as she wants to stretch. It came out of nowhere. It just felt, as much as I love them acting together and I love that, you know, there's this new friendship, dark weirdness that happens. I don't know if she'd do that to Jonathan. So I was a little bit like, hey, we're breaking a rule here, I think. Sweet Martha Kent working for Lionel. It just kind of didn't feel right. Anybody?
I'm going to go work for your arch nemesis. But
yeah,
like that's what it is.
Yeah, it's like going, hey, like Jessica, your wife going, hey, Tom, I'm going to go hang out with your wife now. I'm going to go hang out with the girl that dated you before me.
Oh, well, that's.
You know what I mean? It's like, what do you mean? In a way, I mean, that's a bad analogy.
Or I'm going to go hang out with my ex-boyfriend.
Or I'm going to go hang out with the guy who fired you from one of the most important jobs you have. I don't know where this is going.
We're implying that John and Lionel dated at one point. Is what we're
no, but I know some stuff that happened at the end that we find out that I'm not going to say. The conversation is interrupted as Lana and Clark barge in to tell his parents that they think Byron's parents are abusing him. I love that. It's like, it's not what you think, Dad. We weren't banging in the graveyard at 5 a.m. That was pretty funny. That was good writing.
Not what you think.
Yeah, I like that. This prompts the police to be called out to the moor.
Dad, it's not what you think. And Lana's like, I know. He doesn't even share things with me.
Yeah. The sheriff speaks with the moors and requests to see their son. However, they tell him that it's not possible because their son has been dead for 8 years. Jonathan continues to push the sheriff to look into it for their consciences, and he agrees to get a warrant.
That was a funny scene because the sheriff, do you notice the sheriff would only talk to Jonathan? He wouldn't talk to the kids at the door. He didn't even talk to the kids. Like, Lana's like, we just saw the guy. And he's like, Jonathan, this is an uncomfortable situation. Like, they weren't even talking to the kids at all.
Well, maybe it was an adult thing. Like, we're not talking to you right now. This is an adult situation. I didn't mind that. Chloe looks into things at the torch and learns that Byron indeed is a part of the Dead Poets Society with records of his death at Crater Lake. However, she also finds that he was part of a group of antisocial kids receiving a medical trial. Back at Luther Manor, Lionel is playing piano as Lex tries to figure out why he hired Martha, only to find out.
How did Lionel learn to play the piano?
I mean, look, he's a genius.
Did he pick it up once he went blind?
I think he learned at a young age, and that's, you know, when Lex, he sent them to all these big schools like
Harvard, you know, Yale.
Xavier.
He definitely went to boarding
school. Xavier.
Cincinnati?
No, he didn't go there. I don't know where he went. Where did he go? He went to probably a military academy or school.
Holy Cross.
Xavier. Oh, because you're thinking of X-Men.
The other bald person.
You went there.
Anyway, back at Lionel's playing the piano, and I think because, you know, Lex learned probably everything and all these languages, that Lionel probably did the same. They're both brilliant people, and they both are pretty eccentric. Go on. Only that he finds out that she might be a pawn, Martha, social pawn, to gain favor in Smallville. After Lex threatens Lionel to leave the Kents alone, Lionel likens his situation to Prometheus, an immortal who couldn't escape his familial situation no matter how hard he tried. Clark decides to head back to Moore's house. He brings Pete to help him look for Byron. Clark gets hit by the family German Shepherd, but is unfazed. I really like that he goes, because you're like, he's biting into steel. That was cool.
We had to establish that earlier with Lana's comment, so now we know.
I liked it. Damn.
Duh.
You're like the dog whisperer, Clark. Damn. Who's that? In the house, Clark uses x-rays to find the trap door into the cellar and finds Byron locked up. I like this kind of, you know, Clark having a buddy, having a Robin to his Batman here.
Did anybody recognize that cellar?
Yeah, it was the cellar where the ship is.
It's the same cellar.
It's the same cellar.
It's the
same. I noticed it.
God damn it.
The same stairs. And that was filmed in the other studio where the hospital was.
Yes.
That's where it was, in the second studio. Because they called one studio, it was called, what was the one studio where we started? Burnaby Studios.
Yeah.
They created another soundstage.
They bought the warehouse next door and then they just converted it. And then as years went on, we built a street and then we bought another one. We like took up a whole, we got big. We got big.
Byron is against leaving because the last time he did, he hurt people. But Clark drags him out into the sun-filled front porch. Once there, Byron has an adverse reaction to the sun. His veins bulge, his pupils turn black, and his voice goes deep. Byron throws Clark into the shed and Pete into a car before running off. That stunt with Pete was badass. Right through the windshield. Right, how did that not hurt?
Dude, let me tell you, I remember this. Once I saw it, I remembered it. So we're there. We all get ready. It's elevated, so you're 15 feet in the air already to jump over the rail, and there's the car. And it was like time for the stunt, and Pete's stunt double comes up, I remember being like, how are you guys going to do this? You're just going to like cheat it or whatever? He goes, no, I'm just going to jump. And I go, what? That dude just took us some steps and jumped and turned around and went into that thing. And I remember Sam being like, he's dead. Like, we just saw, and Sam ran over there. I was talking to the stunt guy, are you okay? And the guy's like, hurt, but like, won't show it. But I was just like, dude, that guy just threw himself off the house. There was no wires, no nothing.
Jesus. And you know, when I saw it, I was like, you saw his head hit, like bent forward. I'm like, he's got to have problems, neck problems from that. No doubt about it. Like, that was an amazing stunt. And I hope he got paid well, but probably not. Stunt people are not credited enough. We don't talk about it enough on this show. And this show, stunts were a big, big part of it. And they deserve more than they get.
There's also a lot of pressure because stuntmen, a lot of times they get paid each time they have to do it. So there's a lot of pressure from the production. They only want them to do it once.
Yeah. Because
they don't want to pay them twice.
Right.
Which is sad, but it's all money driven. And so a lot of times there's so much preparation and so much pressure on these guys. You know, if he jumps and messes that up, people get upset.
Clark, visiting Pete in the hospital, Clark tells his parents, and by the way, after that throw in there, no back injury, no neck injury, just a wrist injury. But, you know, let's let it go. Clark tells his parents about his inability to stop Byron's strength. I guess why I'm noticing a lot of these things, because I don't usually notice this stuff. When I notice it, it's so apparent. Usually I let things go. In a lot of episodes, I'm like, great stunt. This was motivated. This is logical. This is just make things logical. So I tend to, shit on it.
Well, and you just watched it.
Yes, I just watched it. Clark tells his parents about his inability to stop Byron's strength. Jonathan and Clark take a trip back to the Moore house to learn what's going on. His mother invites them in and tells them the story of Byron's side effects from the trial. I thought John Schneider was really good in this. He was very subtle and very, it was really good acting. He wasn't pushing it. I noticed that. I noticed there's a couple moments of my acting where I thought I had pushed it too much. I was thinking about it too much. It wasn't as on as I usually am. Clark goes to the town to ask Lana if she's seen Byron, but Chloe interrupts to share more dirt she's dug up. They learn the company in charge of Byron's medical trials closed down, but Luther Corp used to be its owner. Lana goes back to the cemetery to look for Byron and finds him sitting at his own gravesite, of course. Lana tries to rein him in, and Byron tells her he's not going back to the cellar. The two end up in a struggle, and Lana gets knocked out as Byron throws her against a gravestone, and her wrist gets hurt again, even though we saw blood on the gravestone and she hit her head to knock herself out.
Do we have a Lana KO count?
Yeah. She's been knocked the hell out.
I think we talked about this before.
I just don't understand why, we see this stunt with Pete, and you're like, oh, his wrist or his arm? And then she gets thrown, knocked out. Oh, her wrist? I guess we got to let it go.
Here's the thing. The costume
It would have been funny to
can make a wrist things to show that they're injured. They can't, they're going to put them in like a neck brace for the rest of the episode?
Well, why doesn't she just say, it was a minor?
Because you can show it visually with a new piece of equipment.
Oh, here's Al.
Oh my gosh. No way.
Al!
There's a bomb.
Al Welling's here.
You're
too,
live.
And Ryan. We're live. We're doing a recording of Nocturne.
Nocturne? Okay.
You don't remember it either.
I'm trying to remember that episode.
Yeah, I had a lot of issues with it so far. It just was the one episode that jumped out at me that a lot of things were just very incredulous.
Convenient.
But
it's about it's about the boy who was stuck in the cellar with the guy from Night Court.
Is it the boy in the cellar who's it's like a Hulk thing?
Yes.
Yes.
Did you have a lot of problems with that too?
Yeah, I don't think it was one of our finest hours. Let's put it that way. I think what's interesting is that season two, it's like we started off strong, I think, with really four pretty, because I think the Red Kryptonite episode the one episode for that?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think we came out of the gate really strong, and I don't think Nocturne was one of our finest hours. So, it's the nature of, old time network television. So.
Oh, yeah. I always stick up for it. I'm like,
they can't all be great.
They can't all be. You do 22 episodes, and the first four, hey, there's a lot of great shit in there. And then you hit this one and you're like, it didn't move it moved the story a little because, Martha starts working with Lionel, which I thought was a little abrupt.
Yes.
I thought it was a little disrespectful to Jonathan Kent. Did you guys talk about that in the writer's room? Like, why would she do that?
We did, but we wanted to, we kind of really wanted to give Annette her own story. And, the idea that she would work for Lionel, we knew it would put friction in that relationship, which we thought at the time, I think was a good idea because, the Kents were always sort of this very much a unit. And we wanted to see, what happens when we put some friction between them.
That makes absolute sense.
And again, she talked about it in season one. You know, she's the city girl who moved to the country because she fell in love. But there's a certain point where you're like, you know what? I'm, you know, Clark's growing up and I'm not getting, you know, as much out of all of this as I once was. So what else is there in my life? And then, you know, there's Lionel dangling something in front of her, you know, where she can be her own person. You know, Jonathan's got the farm, Clark's got his friends, and you know, what does she have? So I
think, yeah, Michael, I think leave him alone.
You know, that as well. And it really, you know, and also, you know, to put Annette and John in scenes together, which we wanted to do.
Yeah. You know, that makes perfect sense. And it's funny because I kept saying this, even though I find a lot of problems and I'm the only one that mentions them, I had issues with, I didn't hate the episode. It's not like I hated it. No. I just found a lot of problems with it.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't remember it that well, as you can tell.
That's totally cool. Well, listen, we want to do this thing. It's called Random Call with Al. I just call. Okay. If you answer, you answer. And if you don't, you don't.
That's totally fine.
Yeah. Or you call me back if you want. If you don't, we'll say this is the episode and we can have like a little brief 3 minute or whatever. Happy New Year to you. Congrats on the success with Wednesday. Everybody should be watching that show. I know all my listeners are probably watching it. And, you know, I know it's it's not mostly English actors. So, you know, Rosenbaum's here for you if you need me to fly.
There you go. Okay.
I love you, buddy.
Thanks, Al.
Take care.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Lana tries to rein Byron in and gets knocked out. Then Lana gets knocked out. Byron throws her against a gravestone. Clark goes to visit Lex at Luther Manor to learn more about the medical company that is responsible for Byron. While there, they see a Luther Corp helicopter picking up Martha and Lionel for a trip to Metropolis. As they lift up, the helicopter begins to malfunction, hovering in place because Byron is underneath the copter, holding it back from flying away. I thought this was really a great stunt.
This was cool.
Like, there's no way they're going to show. How are they doing this?
It was really cool.
And it was excellent. Highlight of this show that is memorable. I mean, the wide shot of him holding it and, you know, and seeing his face and Martha's POV of him holding down the helicopter. This is not an easy achievement.
I even liked the way the actor, when he was like, Luther, it was like pretty, it was scary.
Yeah.
It was
he did a really good job. He really did a good job.
And also just like a really intense with the helicopter whirring the whole time and you guys having to act through it. I don't know. Do you remember that?
Unfortunately not. You'd think I'd remember that. I remember Pete getting thrown under the car though, but the helicopter thing, I'm sure the actual actor part was cheated somehow, but I think when they showed the back of the guy holding the thing, I think they just had some stunt guys do it and a really awesome pilot, you know, and
stupid question.
It looked real to me.
Stupid question. The helicopter scene, was that a separate day than when you threw him into the well and you went down that shaft? Was that a completely different day you shot that?
I don't recall, but I would bet that helicopter scene was probably its own thing.
That probably took 8 hours.
Because those helicopters, again, follow the money. Those helicopters are expensive. So they want to just probably focus on that. We had another episode, I think, in the next season where we had a bunch of helicopters. It was an epic day because you have a helicopter with a helicopter chasing it so it can camera and video it. And the way these guys come in, what these helicopter pilots can do, it's amazing.
I remember that pilot. I remember him. I think he was
friends with Bob Hargrove.
Yeah, he was friends with Bob Hargrove. I do remember him.
Yeah.
I think I flew in a helicopter later in the series when we go to the Arctic or whatever, when we shot in Whistler. Oh, yeah. And they brought me up there. They dropped me on a fucking glacier. But also, I stopped the snowmobile. We'll get to that. I saved the day. And also, you guys don't understand. The helicopter literally dropped me on a glacier and we didn't know what I would step in. I could have died. Now that I think of it, I didn't know where it was. It was clear. There's no footprints. So I'm walking down a mountain, a steep glacier that I could have just easily died. I should have said no. And they didn't even air this shit. That footage was never, ever shown. Fuckers.
It's like all your makeout scenes, everything, man. All the cool stuff you do.
Yeah. Byron pulls the chopper to the ground, throws Martha to the side, begins attacking Lionel for turning him into the monster that he is now. Clark stops his attack and tackles Byron through a well into the dark tunnels below. The dark returns him into his docile self. Byron gets him into the hospital, apologizes to Clark and Lana for his attack. Now, what happens to him?
He's just back in the cellar?
Well, no, like now Martha's going to funnel some funds to get some research done on this drug, and he's going to get some help.
Hopefully. I hope so.
Right? Isn't that the hope?
Yeah. At Luther Manor, Lex goes to check in on his father's recovering from the attack. Lionel lets him know how Clark was there to save the day. Martha interrupts them to confirm with Lionel and Fun that the funds are being transferred to do research and to work to help Byron's condition. You're right, Ryan. Lana meets up with Clark on the farm. He apologizes for prying into her relationship with Byron. Lana lets him know with those seductive eyes that when she was being attacked, the first person she thought of was Clark. The episode ends with Lana and Clark debating the idea of sharing all of yourself with someone else versus keeping some secrets for protection. That's a moment when I would have lied. I went in for the kiss. 100%. Ryan, admit you would have.
Probably not.
Probably not?
No, I keep things to myself. I would have done what Clark did.
You would have? You wouldn't have kissed her and just not told her the secret? Here's the thing. If she ever found out that you had the secret, she'd go, oh, now I know why you didn't tell me. No, she wouldn't.
So just get it over with. Right.
I don't know.
Pete was upset when he found out. Remember?
Oh, don't touch him. He was.
He overreacted. Richard Mall, things of note on this. Richard Mall and John Schneider previously worked together on the Dukes of Hazzard. I didn't know that.
Oh.
The first Smallville episode written by Kelly Souders and Brian Peterson. Oh, shit. I love Kelly and Brian. And so, oh, man, they're going to listen to this, aren't they? Listen, I love you guys. You're talented as shit. You wrote some great episodes. I didn't hate this episode, but I just had a lot of issues with it, and I'm sure you probably agree on almost all of them.
If you're a listener of the podcast, we just had a conversation recently about how the writer rooms were situated, and they were probably given a task to write this sort of episode, and this is what they did. I mean, and by the way, we also learned that they weren't getting really paid.
Yeah, so they weren't paid much at all, if not, yeah. Byron's name, as briefly referenced by Lana, is a nod to the 19th century poet Lord Byron, who wrote the poem Prometheus, mentioned by Lionel during the episode. Interesting. That's good. Cool. That's good writing.
Thanks, Bryce.
I fell asleep while watching the episode. Bryce. Bryce fell asleep. Well.
I just love the way you're like, now that you realize Brian and Kelly wrote it, you're like, oh, that's good writing. That's good writing. Good nod.
Well, there was some good stuff, but overall, it just was an incredulous story. It was just
too many broken wrists for your taste? Oh, Lionel got a broken wrist. He was in a sling at the end.
That's right. Jesus, everybody's wrist. Come on.
Like that.
Because your wrist is on my list. Let's get into some good stuff here. This is our privileged patrons. They are wonderful patrons who support the podcast. Go to patreon.com/talkville. We need you. We're still trying to get sponsors. And your help keeps this podcast alive so we could, do all that stuff. This is Brian, a patron, and we'll listen to what Brian has to say. Here we go.
Hey, this is Brian G, and I have a question for Season 2, Episode 5, Nocturne. In Season 1, we saw that a lot of the Freaks of the Week took on horror movie vibes, and Nocturne takes that to a gothic place. I was wondering, was it an unintentional choice to break away from traditional supervillainy for Clark to fight?
Good question, Brian. I don't know that.
Let's call Al.
We're
going to call Al back. Al did reference it as a Hulk character.
More of a Hulk, yeah. More of like a Marvel.
He did say that.
Also, gets the Luthers on the bad side in a sort of transitive way.
You mean being that they're responsible?
Yeah, that they're responsible for...
Well, they were also responsible for jitters for that guy.
Also true.
Yeah. They're responsible for a lot of shit that goes on.
Yeah. I think also what I get out of that question is shining a light on the idea that this episode felt more tragic than just solving the puzzle. There's some tragedy in this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, that he can't be with Lana is tragic. It's almost like that Romeo and Juliet feel, you know? But in the sense that, you know, he can't be with her because he's sort of this monster. That's Beauty and the Beast.
Which is Frankenstein, Beauty and the Beast.
Hey, it's Tom from Niagara Falls, Canada. I have a question for season 2, episode 5, Nocturne. That ending with the helicopter, that whole sequence there, what was that like behind the scenes? I mean, that helicopter looked like it was CGI in one moment. It looked like it was just gone the next, and they were just kind of using like a leaf blower off of the screen. Does Tom remember what it was like shooting with the helicopter that day?
Thomas, stop shitting on the show. I didn't think that. When I watched it, I actually thought it looked great. And I'm critical. Maybe I didn't see what you saw, but Tom, tell me something. He's laughing his ass off.
I'm laughing that just the fact that he says leaf blower because as I said, I don't really remember being there that day, but there's probably a point where Russ or somebody was probably hitting us with a leaf blower or a fan or something. We pretended, because if you don't see the helicopter, the helicopter's not there. The helicopter does not stay for off-camera dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not there. So there's probably big old like swamp fans or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Fun fact, found out the helicopter shot with the blades cutting the ground was something the effects team worked on a lot. Had to CG rebuild the entire helicopter and CG rebuild Byron's hands because in the original shot, he wasn't moving in a way that made sense. Or was easy to work with. That's expensive.
Well, there you go.
That is expensive. They probably spent another $100,000 they didn't want to spend. So not only did they get a mediocre episode at best, they had to spend more money. Sorry about that.
An expensive, mediocre, budget-breaking episode?
By the way, Thomas, if you ever ask a question, refer to yourself as Thomas the Leaf Blower, and we'll always remember you. Jenny, I got your number.
Hey, it's Jenny from Virginia. My questions for season 2. Episode 5. How did Lex not see the commotion outside? Thank you.
Wait, what?
The commotion outside with the helicopter. How did he not? He was right in his office. It's right behind him.
Well, they had every other base covered. They had, like, Martha knows about the powers. They knocked the helicopter pilot out, and Lionel's blind. And then he could just fight Byron. But yeah.
Can you imagine a shot? Just a shot of from the outside looking in and him just peeking out the window and ending on that. I see it. Show's over.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of 3 pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Here's Sarah, but you're not Jenny, but I actually didn't think about that. There's so much going on that I just, maybe he was taking a shit. I mean, honestly, maybe he went to work out somewhere and had his headphones on, was working out. I mean, there's a lot of things that could have happened. Sarah?
Hi, my name is Sarah. I'm in Arkansas. This is one of my favorite episodes to rewatch because Martha finally gets character development that doesn't revolve around being a wife or a mother, which as one of the few adult women in the show seems fairly important. More importantly, it's the start of my favorite relationship in the series, Martha and Lionel, because what's not to love about putting two of the more brilliant and ridiculously attractive actors in scenes together? Also, y'all need to keep a tally of how many times y'all gush over how just ridiculously attractive John Glover is. Glad it's not just me.
I don't talk about how much it was. Maybe Tom does or something. I mean, he's a good-looking guy.
He's got great hair.
Yeah, I think John's a good-looking guy, especially, you know. He's definitely a handsome guy, but I don't gush over him. Jesus, Sarah. But I agree with you, and I agree with what Al said. You know, it's good to have strong female characters. I think
if you think about Byron's character is kept in a cellar because it's not safe for him to come out. Clark, if he were to be kept inside like that way, look at how it affected Byron's parents. They were almost dying on the inside themselves. And that you get, so you get the father mother dynamic on that side, you know, just being like wrecked and like,
yeah,
not being able to move forward. It's sad. It's
yeah.
Really sad.
I like the, I do, as much as I thought it was a little abrupt, I get why they put these guys together, Lionel and Martha, and two top-notch actors going head-to-head is always fun to watch, and that character development should pay off. And here's Jason. But thank you, Sarah. I appreciate you. Here's this Jason.
Hey guys, it's Jason from Pittsburgh. This question is for season 2, episode 5, Nocturne. The question is, do you both feel that it was clearly explained what Byron exactly was? Was he a zombie? Was he a vampire? Was he a werewolf? Do you guys feel that that was clearly explained?
I honestly thought he was kind of a werewolf kind of character, like a monster. I didn't.
That's what I thought I was. That's what I thought I was watching.
Yeah, I get.
But
the Hulk,
but you're right.
It was kind of like the Hulk, where he's a normal person, then it becomes kind of this monster. So in a way, it was. But
I'm also really glad that he didn't like come out in the daylight and then turn into a werewolf. That would have been really bad.
That would have
because
really
werewolves.
Because it's the opposite.
Yeah.
The opposite.
Didn't they referenced Jekyll and Hyde in the episode, I think. Wasn't it, were they kind of going for that a little bit?
Oh.
Yeah, I agree with that. Kevin, what do you think?
Hi, this is Kevin Jacobs calling from Chapel, Nebraska, watching season 2, episode 5, Nocturne. And I'm wondering why they went through the process to hide John Glover's hand to show that he was not playing the piano, but all the while you could see that there were keys not moving in the piano. Thanks, bye.
Didn't notice that. I actually was looking for his hand so much that I didn't even notice that. I love that wraparound shot so much. It was very a la Greg Beeman, who has a propensity for doing those sort of shots. But that didn't bother me. I thought he kind of sold it for the most part. What do you guys think?
I didn't catch it, but I bet it was a sound issue on the day, you know? Because if you see them moving, that means the piano's making sound, or it's an extra effort to somehow rig that all to happen. And I think they just were like, just pretend you're playing and we don't have to ADR it so much.
Yeah.
Even if you like hit like that middle pedal and mute everything, like those things still make noise, like the boom, 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 boom. So I don't know. Yeah, sound issue. I agree.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't bothered by it. And as you know, Kevin, I'm bothered by a lot of things.
I just assumed that he doesn't know how to play the piano and we're just going to roll with it.
He didn't. Kendall from I mean, he was brilliant piano player. He's a great pianist.
John Glover?
Yeah.
Oh. I didn't know he was a pianist.
Pianist.
Jesus.
Kendall from New Zealand. When Byron's mom takes Jonathan and Clark down to the basement right after she says, "You must think we're horrible parents," both Mr. Kent and Clark look back at her with the exact same movement. Was that choreographed?
You just said Mr. Kent, like the dude from Jaws said, Mr. Quint.
Mr. Kent, I quit. I ain't going no slab, no shack. Mr. Quint, I quit. I ain't going that old slab, no crazy shack.
That was a deleted scene in Jaws. No, I don't have any idea. I'd have to talk. I don't know. Mr. Kent and Clark look back with the exact same movement. I don't think Tom remembers, do you, Tom?
Oh, I don't remember, but I'm sure it was probably John's idea.
Yeah, I could see Schneider wanting to do that.
Yeah.
All right, guys. This is an interesting episode.
Oh.
Because the death and save count, how many people died in this episode?
I think less than the amount of people who hurt the wrists.
Zero dead, zero saved. But wouldn't you consider, no, zero Clark, saved.
Wait.
No, Clark saved Lionel and Martha.
Yeah.
Bryce.
We kind of saved Byron.
And again, he's kind of saved Byron. Who saved Lana, though? Is that just sort of brushed over in a little bit of dialogue?
I mean, she wasn't sick.
Well, she was KO'd in the graveyard.
Yeah, but she wasn't. Like, she just woke up in a hospital. She wasn't saved. I don't want to try to
but
kill her.
Save herself? Does that count?
She
saved herself?
I think two to the saves because you did save Lionel and Martha. I wouldn't say save Byron.
And the pilot.
And the pilot. So three people. You saved three people. So the series, Bryce, let's add this. It's now 58 saved, 40 dead. We got to catch up with the death. Rosenbaum rating system.
One. I'm going to give it a one.
One rose.
I'm going to give it one rose.
Oh, my Lord.
for the development of Martha Kent. And
I could see that.
And the stunt work. I think those were some exemplary things that happened.
All right. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Tom.
It's a tough one because there's a lot of issues in it. But at the same time, I found myself enjoying it a lot. The stunts, the Martha, the what ifs. You were trapped in a basement and who are these horrible parents? And then you find out, oh, there's this bigger situation happening here. So I think there was a lot going on. I was going to give it, but I'm still going to give it one rose.
Well, I said I didn't hate it. I thought it was somewhat enjoyable to watch. I will not give it a rose. I will give it a heater. It's neither here nor there. Should you watch it? Eh. Is it bad? Eh. Would you recommend? That's just how I feel. And you guys can tell me what you think when you write online and follow us on the Twitter and the Insta and the Facebook and all that. Ryan's favorite scene. I already know it without him even giving our questions, but you have to be honest.
Do you?
Have you already chose one?
I have, because this I did not watch this one at midnight. So
I have a feeling Ryan's favorite scene. Let me just guess if this is a choice.
Yeah, yeah. You want to guess my three favorite? Three ones I highlighted?
Three favorite you highlighted. One is the helicopter scene.
That's one.
Okay. Two is the scene with Martha and Lionel.
It was not on my highlighted list, but...
Okay. And the other one for sure is the wraparound with Lionel and Lex piano.
That is one of them.
That's one of them. So I missed... There's one left.
Oh. All right. So here's where we're going to go. We're going to go number one, piano scene.
Okay.
Number two... where you go pee through the... Well, we're not going to go. It is. Number two is pee through the car window scene.
That was a good one.
Because that was intense. And three is helicopter. So we got piano...
Two stunts.
Piano, car window, and helicopter. One, two, three.
All right, so Tom and I say it at the same time.
One, two, three.
Helicopter.
Helicopter.
It's helicopter.
I was already going to say, I missed the timing, but I was always going to say helicopter.
He's on a delay from the Zoom. Yeah,
I believe
helicopter.
Yeah. I think we're all impressed with that.
It was the standout. It was
the standout.
It was impressive.
It also was like not, you were kind of watching this episode, not thinking that it was going to open up to something that big.
Yeah.
You know, that big of a stunt. I mean, I thought Sam going through the car window or Pete going through the car window was big. If not for the helicopter, that would have been the standout.
Yeah, I agree.
Wow. Yeah.
Hey, Jay Muse is going live playing video games. I get these, set my phone up, that I get these notifications that he's starting a video game.
I got to tell you, Jason Muse, he's been on the Inside of You podcast. And if you guys are listening, I never really plugged the podcast, but if you haven't listened to it, there's a lot of listeners for Talkville. I would just like to say, hey, if you want to give my podcast, Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, a shot. I talk a lot to people in the industry about mental health and anxiety and life, and a lot of people from Marvel Universe, DC Universe, and much more. I'd appreciate it if you subscribed, wrote a review, follow on the handles if you want, all that stuff. I'd appreciate it.
Was he not a Smallville?
If you don't, call the Talkville hotline. Let us know why you're not.
Because I think let us know why you're not. And also, the Inside of You online store has a lot of Smallville stuff as well. And also, the TalkvillePodcast.com has a lot of merch from me and Tom, as we talked about. This episode, well, I guess you gave it one rose. You gave it one rose. I gave it no roses. You know, but no, a heater is not. I didn't shit on it, even though I had a lot of problems with it. I probably, if I wasn't an actor on the show and I knew a lot of people that worked on it, I might go lower. So pretty much I'm telling you, I'm not. Look, that's it for the episode. Please stick around for next week, as we're hoping this will be a glorious episode. We'll bring it back with episode 27. This is episode 6 of season 2. It's called Redux. Don't know what that means. Let's take the discussion online. Let us know your thoughts on the episode over on our socials at Talkville Podcast or Talkville Pod. Show your support for the podcast by joining Patreon at patreon.com/talkville. Couldn't do this without you. We'll give you shout outs for the top tiers. And if you want more info like merch from the show or our hotline number, you can find all that in the description wherever you watch.
Are you sure? Are you sure the next episode isn't called Redo?
No, it's Redux.
I know it's spelled Redux. It is Redux. But I think it's
the French spelling of Redo.
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 Hold on.
Redo?
I think you say it redux, though. R-U-D-U-S.
I just want to see. Oh, shit.
I haven't gone ahead yet.
It has a little
giant. I don't know which one it is either.
Yeah. Looks like it's a great episode, guys. Stick around next week, and we will kick it. We'll keep it real. Please follow Tom Tom Welling and at the Michael Rosenbaum for more information. And Ryan at Ryan Taez.
At Taez Ryan.
At Taez Ryan.
Someone else.
Look, we love you. We appreciate this. We're having a lot of fun. We're back. I think I'm feeling like having more fun this year. I think we're really getting moving now. I think this is going to be a good year. I'm excited. I wish you guys all health and happiness and good thoughts. And I hope you have a wonderful year. And that's about it. So Tom, why don't you, whose turn is it to say the final the tagline of the show? I'll say it.
I'll say it.
You want to say it, Tom? No, it's my turn.
Say it together.
Guys, remember folks, guys, it sounds very, guys, always hold on to Smallville. We'll see you next week. Tommy, Ryan, later guys. Don't think we forgot about you. Top tier patrons. We got to give shout outs. I love shouting out your name. You guys are important to us. Patreon.com/talkville. Thanks for giving to the show and keeping it going. And hopefully we'll do every season if you're here for us. Let's do the shout outs, Tom. Good to see you. Let's rock and roll, baby. And I will be in Atlanta. Don't forget March 4th, 4th and 5th signing and a Smallville Nights on that Saturday night. If you haven't come, try to come. And here we go. Why don't you take it, Tom?
All right, Nikki G, Leanne P, Raj C, Janine R, Santiago M, Leah S, Little Lisa, Tom T, Sophie M, Betsy D, Liliana A.
Did I do it right, finally?
Yes. In our season two. Abhi P, Kimberly E, Michael H, Raj H.
Ray.
Fatima.
Ray H.
Ray?
Ray Harada.
Oh, Ray Harada. Fatima T, Karen Apple M, Danielle B, 99 more.
I think it's actually Fatima T, but Leilani N. Catherine P, Brett G, always hold on to Smallville, Estevan G, DJ Kento, Garrett W, Kimberly L, Justin S, Tom N, Tony V, Rodolfo V, Jason W, Osama A, Lana rhymes with banana, Lana, it's Lana rhymes with banana, W, Nancy D, Brian G, Sarah W, Artoon K, Justin T, and Lucy and Jeremy G.
I think DJ Kento added a T. I don't remember that T being there. But
Kento, is that true?
Anyway, there's Artoon K, Justin and Lucy O, Jeremy G, Amanda R?
Yeah.
Teddy 127, Michael P, Theo M. We just saw Michael P in Dallas.
We did.
By the way, I remember. Theo M, Ryan R, Grumpy-itis. Not what Michael thinks. Jordan M, Hillary B, Craig G, Christy R, Pollyanna, Karen P, Derek G, Jorel, my dad, Richard S, not Richard Donner, Heather and G, Heather and Greg's, all right, Nico B, I made, talk Bill say,
Putz.
Lutz.
Brian H, Georgina B, Eric K, Clark M, Clark's M, what if I did it like I was like a news announcer, but every word is like I'm telling a sentence, like Clark's M, Kristen B, Takashi M, Kevin E, Nanine W, Stephanie K, Darth Achilles, Finky, Tito G, Mixter, Stephen F. Damn, who's that? Jeanette E, Dead Vid, Allison H, General Zod, Kralk, Clark Backwards, Drew M, Aracelis R, Big D, John Glover's Luscious Mane, Doug R, Tommy Z, Boston 68, Isabel, Sager S, Corey L, Ivy and Sam, Mr. Home Arcade.
Cal T, Amanda K, Jesse C, Lumberjack, Claire M, fourth favorite character, underscore Zoe, Scott and Dylan D, Brown, Joshua W, Green Alice, what is it?
Karenera?
That's a new one.
Karenera M.
Another one from
M.
Mess up. Karenera M. Karenera. Eldon Supremo.
Eldon Supremo.
Eldon Supremo. Sarah Q2, Leslie V, Gary H, Tatiana S, Robert G, Natalia, man, why did I take all these? Natalia G, Jewel Jules, Mick Burtz, Ginger M, you got the last one there. I'm not going to
Yerevan Plaza underscore XE, So
wow, way Julie to keep was, it simple.
Julie was there. She was in Dallas. Hi, Julie.
Oh, nice.
McBurt's Ginger M, Eurovan Plaza underscore XC. I love it. We got can't do it without you. You know that. We really appreciate you. Thanks for supporting us. Keep supporting us. If you're enjoying this, so are we. We love it. All right, Tommy. I'll see you later, buddy.
Later, bud.